All right. One of my pleasures to see the Colonel, of course, that is Jerry Coleman, one of the great people of all time. Jerry, I'm reading the sporting news the other day, and I come across a story about the great comedian, Joe E. Brown. Of course, he had the big mouth that he used to, you know, that was his trademark, but very funny guy. And it showed in his story that he did the pregame and the postgame shows for the New York Yankees in the early 50s. I never knew that.
And the guy that did the real stuff was a guy by the name of Dizzy Dean. What a combination that was. You're talking two characters on the same... Oh, wow. Anyway, he was good, though.
How about Joey Brown, though? This is a guy of Hollywood. I mean, he loved baseball, and he got the job, and he took it seriously.
He absolutely did. You know, you can't take a job like this, like, casually. You got to be serious about it, or don't do it, because it shows immediately. But he was a good guy, really. He loved baseball. He loved where he was. He lasted only a year or two. I don't know what happened, but they dumped him. They probably wanted more money. But anyway... He was really a great asset to the New York Yankees. I think it was 52 or 3 or somewhere in there. I'm not quite sure.
No, you're exactly right. That's when it was. Jerry Coleman joins us. I wanted to do a show on numbers in baseball. And, of course, when you talk about a Yankee, and, of course, you were one of the great Yankees of all time, even though you deny it, it was true. What number were you, and how did you come up with your number?
I'll tell you what. When you went to spring training, you got a number. And if you were over 38, you were in the minor leagues, just waiting for it to send you out. And I got number 42. So I thought, well, what the heck? I said, and I kept going and going, and finally I made the ball club with number 42. Then they wanted to give me a better number. I said, no, I'll keep this. Then one night I'm at a big dinner with a guy by the name of Howard Cosell. Great, great broadcaster. They said, Gerald Francis Coleman, number 42, the wrong 42. I almost punched him right in the nose because Jackie Robinson was 42 in Brooklyn. I was 42 in the Bronx, and nobody thought much about it. Of course, what Bronx, you know, isn't the same as what Jackie did for baseball and what he did for sports and for the world. People don't realize how dramatic he was, how big he was, how important he was to everything in those days.
Boy, I'm glad you brought that up. I love the movie 42. I thought it was absolutely outstanding to see it. And I lived in Brooklyn, so I remember, you know, some of those anecdotes at that time. But the Yankees didn't have African-American players. Vic Power was one who came up, and they traded him for various reasons. And finally, it was Elston Howard. What was life like with the Yankees when integration's going all around baseball and not really in New York?
Well, I was the player representative not only for the Yankees but for the American League at that time. And Elston joined us in 1955, I believe it was. I forgot the year. It's a long time ago, folks.
Right.
Anyway, he joined us, and Ed Sullivan wanted him on his show. And how they're going to get Elston Howard out of Florida up to New York? So I had to escort him there. And he was one of the finest human beings that ever lived. He died young. It was tragic, but he was just a great person. And I came from California. I never knew anything about the African American stuff and the problems. But Jackie Robinson did the minute he left California and got into the East and the South and so forth. And it was sad the way that was handled. I was at Binghamton in 1946. And Robinson was with Montreal. And we had a pitcher that came down to help us get into the playoffs from Montreal. And he said this, quote, and unquote, I'm not going to use the words, yet. Man, I tried to hit that right in the head. I couldn't get him. I tried to hit that right in the head. I couldn't get him. He was serious. He wanted to hit Robinson. And Robinson not only carried baseball, he carried the whole, I guess, thought of great athletes, black, white, green, pink, who cares? If they can play, forget it. And on the West Coast, we didn't know about those things. And I was stunned at listening to this guy talk. He was a Southerner, and I mean a deep Southerner.
Well, in the movie, of course, the great Dixie Walker, and it was portrayed very well. And Ben Chapman, look, he was a former Yankee. You knew Ben Chapman and from the South, from probably Alabama or someplace. But, boy, in the movie, he was very, very racist, bigoted, and I think it was fairly accurate. There have been a lot of stories about him.
Well, there was a tremendous amount of bigotry in those days between the blacks and the whites. And don't ask me why, because, you know, if I went to Vietnam with two people, Pete Rose and Joe DiMaggio, okay? And wherever we went, they had these sort of things stretched out with people in them covered to 90% of them were African-American people that were dying for their country and didn't get any credit for it. But as it turned out, the whole thing, Robinson not only changed baseball, he changed the world in the United States, as far as I'm concerned.
Boy, what a pleasure, Jerry Coleman. Always a pleasure. We hadn't talked about this before, and I'm glad I have a chance to talk to you about it. Let's talk a little more about Jackie Robinson, who also wore number 42. How do you like your number being retired throughout all of baseball?
That's what I tell people. See that number out there? I don't try to improve on Jackie Robinson, who really was a great player. He didn't get up until he was 28 years old. He was in the service and then took a while to get started, and he became one of the great players, not just a great American, but a great player. What a job he did. And, you know, when you look at that infield, if Hodges, Robinson, Reese, and Cox at third, is there any better infield than those four guys put together? I don't know where it is, but tell me if you do.
Yeah, I could give you the numbers. 3 for Billy Cox, 1 for Pee Wee Reese, 42 for Jackie, and 14 for Gil Hodges. And, of course, 39 for Roy Campanella, and 4 for Duke Snider, and 6 for Ferrillo. And whoever played left field, whoever it was probably number 9 or 12 or something.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't count outfielders or catchers, you know. They're just other people, you know. It's the infielders. And I was, no, I mean, that was a great ball club. But you know why we beat them all the time, 6 out of 7? We had better pitching, and people look at home runs as being the ultimate to winning games. No, pitching wins games.
Well, for Jackie, Jerry, tell me a little bit. Now, you played second base, and there's so many pictures of you jumping over people on that double play. I can't tell you, every time I see a picture of you, you're jumping over a runner coming in. Jackie was pretty tough coming in, wasn't he? I imagine you must have, I don't want to say tangled with him, but you had to get out of his way a couple of times.
Fortunately, we didn't play him that much, but basically, in those days, you could hit the second baseman and the shortstop and take him into center field. It was okay. Now, you're eliminated, you're out, and there's a double play automatic on your side. So the world has changed. They've cut that down a little bit, but it was part of the game. In fact, we had a guy named Bob Serb. When a man got on base, first base, he went into pinch run. You know why? To get the shortstop or second baseman. And that was the game in those days. And I jumped for dear life. I didn't want to get killed. I weighed 160 pounds. Some of these guys were 200 pounds, and they ran like fullbacks. So I just got out of the way quickly, and I had the skill to do that.
What's the secret? Of course, Rookie of the Year in 1949, and, Rookie of the Year, MVP of the World Series. I want to make sure that's good. 1950, if I have it correct, right? 1950. All right. But what's the secret of getting out of the way as an infielder? Because you were very deft at getting out of the way.
The thing is to catch a ball with two hands and throw it as you look to first base. Don't look at the runner. A lot of guys look at the runner, and once they do, they're done. Just throw it to the first baseman and then jump. And that's all I did. And I was quick with my feet. In fact, I tumbled when I was in junior high school, and I do those things quite well. But it wasn't any fancy thing. It's just that I could jump and get the devil out of there before they could get to me.
Well, you did it very well for the New York Yankees in a great World Series you had in 1957 as well. We were talking about numbers, and again, the Yankees do it probably better than anybody with all the retired numbers. You're going to be heading to New York for the old-timers game, and you get to see those numbers again, number 7 and number 1 and Casey's number and Gehrig and Ruth. My goodness, it must be just a thrill for you.
Well, the only thing is, one's gone. 3, 4, 5, 6. Is 7 gone, too? Mantle, that's right. What's the matter? My roommate, for God's sakes. Yes, he's gone, and then 10 and 8 and so forth, Barron, Dickey. But the only number left is 2, and you know Derek Jeter's going to take that with him very soon. He's a great Hall of Fame shortstop and probably a better hitter than both Phil or me. So he could play, and I think that'll be the last of the single-digit numbers when he goes.
Wow. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, Derek Jeter will have number 2. Jerry, what is the weekend like, the old-timers weekend, the way the Yankees do it? Now, a lot of people don't remember, haven't seen it. When it was on Saturday, the game of the week, boy, you couldn't wait to see that game that would be played. Do they still do that?
They still do it. I don't. I can't raise my hand or bend over anymore, so I don't do any of that stuff. But what has happened, of course, and I'm going to be 89 in a couple of months, and the only people left that I played with are Whitey Ford and Bobby Brown that'll be there. Charlie Severa can't go. Yogi, I understand, can't walk, so he can't play. So, I mean, what's happening, age just wipes you out after a while. And we have a wonderful time because you see people you don't see. But so far, our group is disappearing into the wilderness. And aren't many people there that I'm chummy with because I don't know them. They're kids, you know. A lot of them think I'm their grandfather.
A heck of a baseball player, a great American. You know, we've always talked about your stints in World War II and the Korean War and the just amazing things that you did. All right, I was asked a question today to give me the three best outfielders of all time. And, yeah, I'm going to let you think about it as I talk about it. But Greg Orr, good Yankee scout, asked me this question today. And I said, well, I'm going to take DiMaggio. I'm going to take Mays. And for what he accomplished, Babe Ruth. I mean, Ruth did more than anyone in the league ever did with the whole combined league. I'm going to ask you that. Your three best outfielders of all time.
Well, there's one you're missing, Al Kaline, with the Detroit Tigers in right field. I don't know anyone that I saw that was any better. DiMaggio was peerless in center field. And, of course, left field, you could take Mantle, but he wasn't a great outfielder. He was more of a hitter and a runner and an exciting player. But there are other players. You know, you could even take Jimmy Pearsall on left field. He was half nuts anyway. So, I'm sorry, Jim. No, he was a character. But I would take DiMaggio, Kaline, right off the top, and Mays has got to be in there someplace.
Yeah, and of course, we talked about Ted Williams, who you knew so well. And boy, you know, to pick the best outfielders of all time, not so simple.
Well, you said outfielders. Now, you're not talking about hitters. Williams was the best hitter of all of them. I mean, if you want to get into specifics, you can't put Ted as a great outfielder, but he was the greatest hitter that I ever saw, and I thought an incredible human being. But basically, you know, being an outfielder is one thing. Being a hitter is another thing. But the combination of Kaline, DiMaggio, and Mays, you can't beat that.
Boy, pretty good. Boy, a pleasure to talk with Jerry Coleman. One last thought for you. Managers, and now you've managed in the major leagues. We do remember that with the Padres. What does it take to be a good manager in the major leagues? What is a characteristic that you want?
Have four good characteristic pitchers. I'm not kidding. I know how to handle them. Managers have to be psychologists. They really do. They have a lot of problems because you have a lot of guys out there that aren't mature yet, and you got to talk to them, get them organized, and get them going. Stengel was a brilliant manager. I mean, he knew more about you in a week than you knew about yourself in 10 years. I know Joe McCarthy was a great manager. There are others out there that are brilliant. I just don't know about them, the ones that I know and have played with and around. One great manager that nobody knows anything about is the manager of the San Diego Padres, Bud Black. Intellectually, one of the finest intellectual managers I've ever seen anywhere, any place.
Wow. Did Stengel ever call you in into his office and say something to you or teach you something? Or was he one of those guys that would talk to you?
Well, he'd talk to you. If you said, hey, Case, how you doing? He'd talk for 30 minutes. But the one thing, Stengel was not a guy who did that. In fact, I've got a great story. It happened in Washington, and Johnny Mize is on a ball club, and he's filling in here and there and so forth. And every day the lineup was on the wall, and you come in and see where you're playing and where you're hitting and so forth. And in one day walks DiMaggio, who's playing center field, batting fifth. He never talked to Stengel again. He was the four-hitter period for life. And when he put him out of that one, it happened one day, and that's all. But I know it really put a bridge between Casey and Joe.
Well, boy, in those days, getting back to the Robinson movie just a little bit that we alluded to earlier, Red Barber, of course, is prominent in the movie, and you read the stories about Red in those days, you know, from the Florida. He didn't want to do the games. Branch Rickey asked him, will you do the games? He said, no, I'm not going to do them. He went home, spent the night at home, talked to Lila, his wife, had a couple of martinis, came back the next day and said, I'll do the games. You knew Red Barber.
Yes, quite well. He was my instructor. You know, when I came up, what they did to me, which was really exciting, opening day in spring training, 19-something, 50 or 50, I don't know what, it was my first year as a broadcaster, said, Jerry, you do the first inning. I said, good. I got my mindset of four ground balls to the infielder, get it over, it's done. This really happened. 12 men went to the plate. I didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know how to keep score. And why they did that to me. This is New York, the biggest market in the United States, and I'm leading up spring training. And that was probably my worst experience in broadcasting.
So did Red straighten you out and teach you?
Red stayed with me every day after every game we talked. And I use things today that he taught me back in, 60 years ago, whatever. He was a great person for me. He was kind of personal about some people, didn't like them, but he liked me a lot, and every day we'd sit, when the game was over, especially in spring training, we'd go over this whole thing for a half hour, an hour, and so we did this, you did this, you did that, and so forth. and I learned from him, and I never forgot.
Well, how did you learn, how did you come about hanging a star on a play?
I hate to tell you the story. You know, when you're in the fifth grade, what happened at the end of the week? You had a spelling test, you know. If you got them all right, you got a gold star.
Right.
I never got a gold star. I consider that to be the epitome of excellence. And, of course, the old doctor came from Stengel. I picked it up from him because he was, got what I mean, doctor? Got what I mean? I wanted to say a couple times, no, I don't got what you mean.
Well, I use the star in my scorebook. I do. And I use it on the postgame show. And that's the way I do it. And that is in honor of you.
Well, God bless you. Thank you. I'm amazed and surprised.
All right. A pleasure to have you on, as always. I'm so glad you made the trip up, and many more, and I'm just thrilled that you could be here. Jerry Coleman.
This is my last trip and my only trip this year, and I'm semi-retired. I do about 30 games as an analyst, and that's it.
Hey, but you got a statue. I meant to call you last year. You got a statue in front of the park. How about that?
I was going to take it out of there and put it in the garbage can, but it's too big. No, they have me in a military uniform, in my flight uniform. It's not in a baseball uniform. And I think, probably the finest honor I ever got, really. It's about 7 feet tall, weighs 5,000 pounds, and I can't steal it.
I love it. Well, congratulations. Sherry, thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
All right. More coming up on KNBR 680. What a thrill. The sports leader.